It's Sam with Rowdy Alternative. Today we have TJ Lau, lead vocalist for the Georgia Thunderbolts. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Just enjoying the day.
Hell yeah. You said you just got some rain up there?
We got some rain not long ago. We've been in a drought here for about a month or so, so it was nice to finally get a breath of fresh air.
Right on. So where are you now? Where do you live?
I live in Taylorsville, Georgia.
Okay, cool. So I didn't know if you live in there, Nashville, or what, but
No, I don't. I still live here where I grew up. I live in Taylorsville. It's about 45 minutes south of Rome, Georgia. Everybody knows that. They have the big festivals and stuff up there.
Yeah, right on, man. So yeah, let's dive into it, dude. Are you guys touring right now? I see you're at home. I don't know if you guys are pretty busy on the road or not.
Yeah, we're actually gearing up. I think the first stop of this month is actually in Nashville, July 25th, over at the Eastside Bowl.
Oh, right on. That sounds fun. You guys, is it a headline show? Are you guys co-headline with anyone?
Yeah, it's a headlining show. I'm not sure who the opener is. I'm really terrible about that until the day of. we do that, and then we've got a few dates. I think the whole rest of the month of July is pretty booked. August is booked, and then mid-August we go to Europe. So, I mean, we're pretty booked throughout the year.
Damn, you're going to Europe. I know you guys toured with Southall before, mm-hmm. who I know some of the guys in that group. And did you go over to Europe with them, or was that you guys or Whiskey Myers? I can't really remember.
I think that was it was either Blackberry Smoke or Whiskey Myers. You're right.
Okay.
We went with a band called Blackstone Cherry a few years back.
Yeah. How's that? How's Europe?
It was sick, man. It's totally different from home. You know, not everything's quite in your reach. Like, you can't just run up to the store and know what to get. But, you know, like, it was a great experience. It was a great learning curve, you know, because that road's hard over there, man. Like, as soon as you land, your sleep's messed up. And as soon as you get in the first groove of playing, you want to keep playing. And then, you know, you realize what time it is. You're like, oh, Jesus, I got to go to sleep.
Yeah, man, I bet. So, like, out there, just with it being Europe and you guys, you know, Southern rock country kind of music, how were the fans out there? Like, I, as a person who doesn't really know about the scene out there, are they big on the Southern rock country stuff?
Oh, yeah, big time. You wouldn't believe it, man. It's like, you know, we walked over there and they made us feel like Lynyrd Skynyrd back in the 70s. It was crazy. We walked out on stage and that's the first time we'd ever been over there. And, you know, there were people singing the lyrics to our songs back to us. And we were like, oh, my God, this is incredible.
Damn, I would never expect that. That's sweet. Is there a certain venue or place you played out there you like the most?
The last one we played, I don't remember the name of it, but it was in Paris, France. And the dude who built the Eiffel Tower, Gustave Eiffel, he built the venue that we played for his daughter when she was growing up. So they would have like balls and, you know, parties and whatever, so-and-so there. And we got to play there and we actually got to see the ground room that he built with all these like pulley systems and the stage like lifts up out of the ground. It's crazy, man. It's a beautiful venue. It was like Victorian era bass looking stuff, but it was beautiful and it sounded amazing. That was in Paris.
Wow. So it was like all like original foundation and stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah, it was incredible. And the stage still came up and down on the original pulley system.
Holy cow, that's awesome, man. I'm happy for you guys. That sounds exciting.
It was for sure. It was a great eye-opening experience because, you know, not everybody, especially if you're from Rome or Taylorsville, not many people that are in a band get to do that kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
And we just tried to soak up every minute, but I probably couldn't name five of the venues we played over there. We played 18 countries in a month, and we were just hitting it like nonstop. And we played some nights like four or five nights in a row and just wake up and we'd start out in Norway and we'd wake up in Austria and be like, how did we get here, you know?
Man. Yeah. Well, and you probably couldn't even like pronounce what the names were either if they're in a different language.
No, not at all. Not at all.
But hell yeah, TJ. So let's go back a bit, just people get to know you and stuff. So when you first started playing, even like before the group or anything, how was where you were from and when you got it, where you got into music? How was the scene there? How was like the musical landscape around you?
The scene around here used to be amazing, man. Like 2014 through 2000 and like mid 2000, like for 4 years from 2014 to mid 2018, Cartersville, Georgia was bumping, man. They, mm-hmm. they had this venue. It opened up. This guy, Jeff, used to own it. It's called Six's Tavern in Cartersville. A lot of bands have played there. Them Dirty Roses have played there. Jesse James from Jackal has played there. Yeah. That's actually where we all met. And that's 8 minutes from my house, you know?
Oh, wow.
All just kind of bumming our way through high school and, you know, figuring out what we're going to do. And me and Zach and Logan, you know, Zach and Logan played music. Logan's been playing guitar forever, and Zach's been playing piano and bass forever. And me and Zach started doing this. Logan was in college, actually. Mm-hmm. And me and Zach would get together and we would play acoustic. We'd go up to the open mic and stuff. And what was so cool about this place was that it wasn't just acoustic. They had live drums. They had amps. They had guitars there. They had everything there. All you had to do was show up, get on stage, and play. So it really gave us an opportunity to get up there and kind of face your first little fears of getting over that little, you know, yeah. the drunk crowd thing, you know. And we were like, we weren't even old enough to be in there. You know, yeah. we were 16, 17 years old. And I remember Zach couldn't even drive, and I just had started driving. And, you know, that's where we met Bristol and Riley, who are from Rome. Mm-hmm. They had a band going, and we met up there, and we played or something. We got together, and we started jamming on stage, and we was like, oh, man, this is great. This is great, you know. And then Zach actually went on to join that band later, and I kind of took a break from it for a while. I was, you know, I was trying to figure it out, like, what I wanted to do. I went to work for my dad doing construction, you know, water and sewer and grading and all that kind of stuff. And then I was like, wait a second, I think I want to keep playing music. So I got back in touch with Zach, and come to find out they were actually looking for a singer. And we got together and we all jammed. And I was like, me and Zach both were like, well, Logan, he plays guitar, you know, he's been playing all of his life, so why not? Yeah. And then that's how it really came to be.
Right on. So it sounded like you guys have known each other for a while, even before the band then, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Me and Logan were in kindergarten together, or
oh,
first
wow.
grade,
okay.
something like that. So we've honestly known each other probably about 25 years. And mm-hmm. Zach was Logan's neighbor. He still is his neighbor. And they live literally, you could throw a half empty water bottle and hit the side of his house. That's how close they live. And, Bristol and Riley, the same thing. They live real close. And, yeah, it's really a close circle, man, because like the scene down here used to be amazing. I mean, it made you want to go out and do things. It made you want to go out and, you know, try new things, go out. Nobody would have ever thought any of us would have ever been musicians, just how we are yeah. and, you know, how we were raised. And this is what we're doing. It's just incredible, you know?
Yeah, man. And like, that is a good point, because when people think of like good areas for musicians, especially in your guys' kind of genre, like they think of, you know, Nashville, Texas, Kentucky even. But I think to like casual listeners, people don't think about Georgia that much. But like in reality, like a shit ton of them come out of Georgia.
They do. They do. And it's mostly like, you know, I've noticed a pattern, man. Like if you like blues and jazz and soul music, you go to Macon, you know? Yeah. And if you like your country music, you go to Nashville. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just a pattern, but there's a huge music scene down in Macon too. Like yeah. that's a whole different ball game down there. There's like some of the best musicians I've ever seen in my life that go down there and play at a famous place where the Allman Brothers and mm-hmm. Wilson Pickett and Otis Redd and all these guys played, called Grant's Lounge. And we actually got to play there not long ago, but it's right downtown Macon, right across from the Fresh Produce record store. And the band room that used to be upstairs was actually, it's like you can't go up there now, but that's where all the bands like Greg Allman and yep. Wilson Pickett and Otis Redding used to hang out and everything. You walk in there and you're like, wow, you know, we get to do this, but it's so cool. Like, and it's so diverse. It's like, as soon as you hit Atlanta, it changes, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, you know, your hip hop and your country and, you know, your bigger bands. And then you go up north and it's just country, you know, and then you go down south, it's soul and blues. And it's just crazy, man.
Yeah. I'm ventured to guess that the Allman Brothers are probably a pretty big influence on you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, man. They're just, you can't yeah. recreate that, you know? And we actually do an Allman Brothers song in our set, and we've done it for years now, and it goes over really well. And we did Midnight Rider, you know, and everybody,
yeah.
we just stop playing and everybody sings the song, you know, and it's amazing. It's a great feeling to see the impact that those guys still have 60 years later.
Yeah. And I know, obviously, I think I want to say all of them are dead now, except J-Mo, that they're one, because they had two drummers, if I remember correctly. But
I think Butch Trucks was the other one. And I think J-Mo, I think he just had a birthday yesterday.
Okay. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I think he just hit 80.
Wow. Okay. And I think he still plays in his own band, too.
He does. Some friends of ours, Otis, they're a blues rock band from Glasgow, Kentucky, and they're good friends with J-Mo, and they play it down at the big house in Macon and stuff with him when he comes out. They said he's the coolest guy. We haven't had the opportunity to meet him, but they say he's the coolest guy ever.
Yeah, and like the cool thing with the Allman Brothers, man, is that I'm a pretty big fan myself, and like they're that one of those groups, because for the most part, I know they, you know, a lot of them passed along the way, even in their early years, but like they had it like right up till the end, man. Like, and then they had like, I believe Derek Trucks played with them for a bit too. And he's incredible in his own right.
Yeah. Warren Haynes with Greg.
Warren Haynes.
Development. They brought so many of these new talents and people that they gave life to, and they just put them on stage, and they inspired them all, you know? And that's what's so cool to see is like, you go up to all these diverse players like Derek Trucks, you know, who's honestly one of the most pristine, prestigious slide players, guitar players.
And underrated.
And, very much so. Very much so. You know, I'd put him on stage with anybody, and he wouldn't have to pluck a note. He'd just slide and just blow him away, man. It's just the feel. It's that feel, that soulful, gritty feel, man. I'm so glad that we've kind of got to come to know these people through the Allman Brothers, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome, man. And we could get off the Allman Brothers in a minute, but there's this incredible video I saw of, it was when Derek was younger, and I think he was on stage with John Mayer and, was it Buddy Guy, maybe? One of them guys.
Oh, B.B. King.
B.B. King, yeah, that's who it was. Yes. And they were just in awe, just staring at him while he was just ripping. It was like, it's crazy, man.
You know, but, you know you've got to be doing some damage if John Mayer is looking at you like that.
Yeah, I know, man. That's awesome. But, so back to you, when you first started playing, has Southern rock always been a part of what you wanted to do, or did you start out wanting to play other kind of stuff, or?
It just kind of came out, man. Like, it wasn't forced, and we didn't try to go in a certain vein. Like, the music we listened to, you know, everybody in the band listens to things, and they were raised on things completely different than, you know, each other. So I was raised on a lot of, like, gospel and old soul and R&B and, you know, rock too, you know, like your Leonard Skinners and your Led Zeppelins and, you know, everything like that. And then you got guys in the band who listen to like Pantera and Sepultura and, you know, Down and stuff like that. Yeah. And Metallica, you know, and Boston and AC/DC. It just really across the board, you know?
Yeah.
And how we grew up and how we were raised, I think plays a huge role on that, because we all come from, me, Zach, and Logan come from a really small town here in Taylorsville, and there's not much. I mean, you get here, and you look around, and you've seen everything, you know?
Yeah.
You've seen everything. You've seen the fields. You've seen the plant. And same, you know, over in Armorchie, where Bristol and Riley are from, there's not much there, you know? But if you get in, like, the downtown Rome and stuff, yeah, there's stuff there. But, you know, I think it was never forced, you know? It just came that way. It was the rock and heavier guitar, and that's the thing about us, though, we're Southern rock, but we tend to get heavy, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say next, man. Like, because it would be, on the outside, it would be easy to just slap the Southern rock label on you guys, but like, if you actually go and listen, like, it's some heavy shit, heavy riffs, heavy everything, like, sonically, man. It makes you guys different too at the same time, while you could also fit into that genre.
Yeah, we have, you know, we've got a lot of opportunities like that, because we can go play with somebody like Dave Mason, who played in Traffic, or you know, he played with Steve Winwood, and, you know, and then we can crank it up and go play with bands like Deep Purple. I mean, we played shows with Deep Purple, and I love them guys. we were hanging right with them, you know?
Yeah, that's another underrated drummer, in my opinion. I'm a drummer, so I always look at those guys, like Ian Pace, man. Like, that dude's insane on the drums.
But, and he's left-handed, so it's kind of hard to emulate unless you are left-handed. You can't get those sounds
You can't do it. I've tried, man. It's hard as fuck.
It's so hard.
Yeah. So awesome, man. So I'm guessing where you're from, like that kind of Southern rock geared blues rock. I'm guessing it was had a pretty big presence where you're from then.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. You know, because, you know, Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Allman Brothers, you know, they weren't too far from here when they were playing in the band. You know, Jacksonville's not that far from us.
Right.
Macon's not that far from us. You know, Alabama's not that far from us. Muscle Shoals isn't too far. And Capricorn. Yep. So we're kind of like in this little loop here. Where
like a belt kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it comes right through, man. And it comes right up. And I'm really glad that we were raised where we were and brought up on the music that we listened to and our parents listened to and our grandparents listened to, you know. And because it all goes back to the soul. I mean, mm-hmm. if you really listen to it, you know, and like the lyrics that I sang and stuff like that, there's a lot of soul and like gospel stuff to that. If you really listen to like the words and stuff.
Yeah.
It's not just like this. It's hard edged. Yeah. But it's not like this, like just it's not like punching you in the face. It's just right. Like you can do it if you want to, you know, but here you go.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I get what you're saying. So tell me a bit how, and this is something I just learned today about you guys. How'd you guys connect with Richard Young?
Well, we were playing at a show north of Rome in Somerville, Georgia. It was a county agricultural festival. And this was years back. This was like 2017. Mm-hmm. We were opening up for them, and we were just really starting to get in the groove of playing our own music and stuff like that. So we were kind of gun-shy to a lot of things, you know. We didn't even have the tuners on the floor yet. Like, we didn't have those. We had the ones on the back of the headstock, and you know the monitors were all squealy because we couldn't hear and we didn't know where to put them. And we kicked off and we started playing a few songs, and we got into one of our original songs, and I don't remember which one it was. He's told me before. We got into one of our original songs, which is actually recorded on the first record. I think it was Set Me Free. It might have been Set Me Free, because that one kind of goes into like I don't know how to, like, it's Pink Floyd, but it's like, you know, Pink Floyd, but it's soulful, and then it's rocking at the same time.
Yeah.
And he was sitting on the back of the bus, and he said he had the window open, and their air was out that day, or he would never have the window open. You just got to know him. He likes to be in the air, you know?
Yeah, sure.
But he was sitting there, and he had the window open. And he got up off the bus, and after we got done with that song, we looked over the side of the stage. He was sitting there watching the whole entire set the rest of the time.
Wow.
And we stayed and watched them play. And then when they got done, he came over and asked us, he said, well, what do you guys think about coming up to Glasgow and cutting a record? And he's been doing it ever since.
That's awesome, man. Because that's another, I want to talk about like underrated bands. That's another one on the list right there.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Them guys, and they've been around forever. They've just very underappreciated, I think.
Yeah, and they used to have this band called Itchy Brother. It was their cousin Anthony, mm-hmm. Greg, their cousin, and Fred and Richard. It used to be called Itchy Brother, and they were almost signed to Swan Song with Bad Company and Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, wow.
And that's actually how they met their manager, who lives in Nashville, but he's in New York. He's from New York. His name's Mitchell Fox. He was the tour manager for Led Zeppelin from like 75 to 80.
Mm.
And that's been their manager ever since. And that's how they met him, was through that. The deal fell through. And then Mitchell came out with them, and he's been doing that ever since.
Wow, man. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but does Richard, does he manage you guys?
Yeah. Yes, he does.
Okay, cool. So has that had any kind of influence? You learn a lot from him, and just with all the time being around him and everything?
Yeah, you wouldn't ever really know it, but he's really big into the Beatles, and he's taught me a lot about, you know, how to play certain notes to get certain points across, and he's taught me a lot about melodies and stuff, and he actually introduced me to one of my favorite singers of all time, which is a guy who's criminally underrated. He has one of the best voices of all time. You have to check him out if you haven't heard him. His name is Frankie Miller.
Okay.
He's from Glasgow, Scotland, and he has the most amazing, soulful, rocking voice. You know, he was like, he actually had a stroke in the 90s. He was about to do a tour, and he was going to start a band with Joe Walsh. but he actually had aneurysm. He had an aneurysm and he completely lost all function, can't sing anymore. He's still alive, but, you know, we actually did a song of his on our first record. It's called Be Good to Yourself.
Okay.
And if you could go back and listen to him, man, it's just, you learn so much from that guy. He's had so much soul. And, you know, Richard's taught us stuff like that, like to really open and broaden our perspective and our horizons to different things we never would have heard of before, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And that's what I love when bands do that, when they like, they aren't afraid to open up like that. And like, and I hate to keep just using the blanket term Southern rock, because obviously you guys are more than that, but that is also like, that's how you could break out of that mold. If you just want to open up and do like you said, like a Pink Floyd-ish song, or like a song with Pantera riffs, stuff like that. Like that's what really sets you apart and helps you succeed, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. As long as you can keep that diversity, which we can, you know, because we even do, what is the name of that song? We do a Great Southern Trendkill.
Trendkill?
Yeah.
Damn. So,
that's pretty, and not a lot of people expect that. It starts up, comes in, like, you know.
Yeah, that's my favorite Pantera song. It's funny you say that. But,
good one.
Yeah. But so describe how your live show is, because I your guys' live show is, like, insane to me. Like, it's just energetic. It's fun. It's engaging. Like, how would you guys describe it being on your side of the stage?
Normally, it's really loud. I'm just forewarn you, it's really loud. You know, they got those Marshall stacks, you know, just blaring right at you, and it's kind of hard to escape. Bristol plays this huge ride. He plays one of those 24-inch pasty.
Oh wow,
the big booms, and it's always crashing. But it's just to have that energy like that is to feel it, you know. And once you get the tone rode off your ears from being deafened over the past, you know, few years, you kind of get in the groove of being able to feel things and knowing where to go. It's just very energetic. You know, like you said, it's very energetic, and it's very, I don't jump around. You know, I'm not a big jumper. I'm not, but I just love to sing, and I love to try to get the point across of the song and the message. And I just want people to have a good time, because, you know, everything is so crazy all the time. People are working. People are running. They're in traffic. They got bills to pay. But when they're paying their hard-earned money to come to a show, you want to try to make them forget about that for the 45 to an hour and a half you have, you know?
Yep.
And that's what we try to do. We just try to engage with as many people as possible, because they're taking time out of their life to come and see us. So why not? Why can't we do the same thing? Because we wouldn't be able to do what we do without them, you know?
Right. And it does say something. You raise a good point there. It does say something about, like, you know, you guys, the front men who jump around, like, they, you know, obviously they're great too. But, like, if you are able to get the point across, keep people just as engaged, like, look at Ronnie Van Zant. Like, he just stood there and sang into a microphone the whole time, and he's one of the greatest front men of all time, in my opinion. You know what I mean?
That's what it's all about to me. You know, everybody's got their own thing, but if you can sit there and do it without trying to get that attention, and if you can just open your mouth and say something, and somebody's like, oh well, damn, you know.
And part of, like, being, like, from a fan standpoint, I think I say it all the time on here, it's a broken record by now, but I think the live show is what keeps you coming, or what is what keeps you engaged and want to follow this band, you know what I mean? I don't know if that's, if you guys really see it that way, or just, you know what I mean?
We wish that we could create on an album what we do live. That's how we feel about it, because we have so much fun. And every time we'll play several dates and we'll try to play the same thing twice, and it never comes out that way. If we could just capture it right there, you know, that would be the way for us, because we are a live band. You know, it's hard to get us in a studio for a while. We all go stir crazy. We like to engage. We like to look at the people. We like to see how they feel about it. You know, that really tells us, you know, if we're doing it right, or do we need to go back to the drawing board and figure this thing out? But the only way to know is to get in front of people and to play.
Yeah, for sure, man.
That's our favorite thing.
Yeah. And going off that a bit, I was talking yesterday to a guy named Alex. He plays drums for a band called Pigeons Playing Ping Pong, which is a, like, kind of a jam band, funky, psychedelic kind of deal. And being a jam band, like, it's all in the live show. And he pointed out, kind of like you could do a live album, but you still don't get the visual. You don't get that moment. I don't know if you'd agree with something like that or not, because live albums nowadays, man, like you don't see many of them like you did back in the day.
No, so. No, not at all. The first, I don't know where they're at, but we have tracks from the first time we played at Exit Inn in Nashville with, I think we're opening for Blacktop Mojo, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, nice, yeah.
But we had the whole show recorded, and I don't know where the tracks went. And we went back and listened to it, and we were like, God, this is crazy. This is heavy. This is loud. We like this. Can we do this? And then we try to do it in the studio, and it's just like, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's not the same.
Right, yeah, man. And the logistics, I'm sure, are crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about your last release came out in June, Crawling My Way Back to You, man. That was a fantastic song. I loved it. So I guess just getting us started, where do you all record at? I think you might have hit on it earlier, but it slipped my mind.
We recorded these last two albums in Glasgow, Kentucky.
That's right. Okay.
It's where the Plaza Theater, a lot of bands have played there, like your it's a big legendary historic theater, like Ronnie Millsaps played there, Blackberry Smoke, Whiskey Myers, Jackal, The Headhunters, mm-hmm. Blackstone Cherry, you know, a lot of people have played there, you know, throughout the years, and it's kind of a legendary place, but right behind it is this little building. That's where we record it.
Mm-hmm.
And
nice.
Actually, Blackstone Cherry's last record, John Fred recorded his drums in the Plaza Theater.
Wow. Oh, the whole theater.
Yeah, the whole theater. Yeah, that's their hometown theater. So they got to go in there and do that. And they set the recording gear in the bottom of the stage. And they're recording those drums. Just sound. They sounded like on them almost. I mean, they were just so big, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, because didn't he like record When the Levee Breaks at like the bottom of a staircase or some shit?
Yeah, it was like, that's right, it was. And can you imagine just the sound of that just being amplified? And they got a great recording engineer and sound engineer. His name's Jordan Westfall. He's one of the best. He's one of the best studio guys, and he has some of the best ears in the business, man. He's criminally underrated. You know, he's done their last few records, and he's just, gosh, he's incredible, man.
Yeah, man. Awesome. So do you guys have, like, I know you have an upcoming album. We'll get to that here in a second, too. But with the last few singles you guys have put out, like, did you have any like kind of like story behind them, or like is there a certain one that you like to like that you put some extra like story behind it, something like that, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, we were scrounging for a song because we were down to the final days of recording, and I was burnt. I mean, I was burnt. Mm-hmm. I was racking my brain. I was going through songs that I'd written years gone by, and I was sitting there. I just got in from doing something, my nephew's ball game or something. I just got in, and I was sitting there by myself, and I was sitting in the stairwell, and I didn't have anything. I was about to put my car up. I was like, oh, my God, I'm over it. I'm going to go eat something, you know. I'm going to do something else. And then I put the capo on the second fret, and I don't play much, like, with a capo or anything. I just try to learn all these weird chords or whatever, but besides that, I sat there and I started strumming these chords, and I kept going and kept going. I said, ooh, wait, picked up my phone and hit the voice memo, and I just started singing Crawling My Way Back to You, the whole song, right there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Just came out like that?
It came out like that, the whole song. It was there.
You guys are aliens. I don't know how you guys do that shit.
Seriously, it comes out of nowhere and when you least expect it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody says that, but that happened. I didn't believe it, and then that happened. I was like, oh my God, you know.
Let me type it in real quick.
Yeah. And I go back, I was sitting and listening. I was like, okay, did I say that? No, you know, it's going back. I couldn't hear it too well because it was real echoey in the stairwell, and I was like, oh man. But that's how that one came to be. And there's a rocker that's coming out on the new record. It's called Little Jim.
Okay.
And it is, it's about an old Western outlaw. What was his name? Reverend Jim Brown. It's got a really cool backstory. He was like a preacher and a church and a gunfighter.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's very visually enhancing. And at the end, it turns into like this big audio slave thing. It's so cool.
Oh, shit. Hell yeah. That's exciting, man.
Yeah, it goes. That's probably the most visually graphic song that we have, that you can hear the lyrics and the melody kind of puts you in like an old Western town. You're like, what the hell? How did I get here? You know?
Yeah, like really paints the picture and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And I was really proud of that song when we threw it together, because it had been music. It had been music for years. And we got in the studio and they were like, well, why don't we try to record this one? I was like, well, I don't have anything for it. And I read these books, these magazines about the old West and stuff. And I seen that guy in there. They had a whole thing. They were talking about like the old chuck wagons and the old the old shotguns and stuff in there. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. And it got to that article of him, and I was like, I read a bit of that, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a song in here somewhere.
Literally had it sitting there, and was just sitting there, and I was like, oh, that's it, that's it, that's it.
That's incredible, man. It's just crazy. Like, it has to feel so good for something to just, like, fall into your lap like that, too.
It is, it is. And to make it, you know, something that people have heard about, but they never really, most people haven't really dug in, a bunch of people have, but the old West is something that's not as talked about anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's always cool when you're growing up, you want to be a cowboy, you want to be an outlaw, you know, yep. You want to do things like against the grain, be a gunfighter and all this stuff. It's like, oh man, it's so cool. But yeah, it was kind of cool that, you know, I had the opportunity to put that into my perspective, you know, and it came out the way it did. And the way that song just twists at the end, it's just like, wow, it kind of brings, it's spooky. I mean, it's very
spooky. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one. I love those. I could, even you just talking about it, I could kind of like visualize like how it will go like melodically and stuff, like with the twist at the end. That's going to be sweet.
Yeah, you're going to have to let me know what you think. I need to know what you think after listening to that one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And now that we're on the topic of writing, like, do you, in your guys' group, is there like a chief co-writer, or do you all do it together, or a chief writer, not a co-writer, or do you all like kind of do it together? How's that work?
Majority, I write the lyrics and the melody and like the skeletons on the guitar. Mm-hmm. But when we get together in a room, that's when it happens. You know, we get together and everybody starts throwing their inputs and their ideas and everything like that. Except for Crawling My Way Back to You. That one's just, they'd never heard that until we walked in the studio. And I remembered, I had to sit back and listen to it. But no, we normally, I'll either bring something in, or me and Logan will work on something and we'll bring it in. Logan actually, our song Gonna Shine, he actually come up with a few of the lines on that song. And he had that idea in his head. And he sent it to me and I was like, okay. And I sent it back and I was like, what do you think? And he's like, well, that's it. Let's do it. And that's how that one came to be. You know, if we get together as much as we can, but like when we get into the groove of making a new album, I'll just start. I mean, I'll just start. I'm just thinking. I'm running here. I'm running there. And then I'll send voice memos. I'm like, we think. And then we'll get together and then we'll pick a few, work on them. If they don't work out, we'll throw them out and come up with something on the spot. You know, just start playing on a riff or something. And, you know, I'm not the best at, you know, coming up with lyrics on the spot, but I'm good at finding the melody to go. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of, while they're playing, I can just find that melody. If they keep playing, I can find that melody. And I'm like, okay. And I start writing and I go back. And it's definitely, when it comes to that stuff, it's, you know, we do it when we get in the room. That's when the song becomes the Georgia Thunderbolts.
Okay. Hell yeah. So, and I hate to bring up the pandemic. No one likes talking about that. But when it comes to getting in the room, or like being able to create as a group, obviously you couldn't play shows then, but yeah. How'd you guys manage, did you guys at all try to like write like when you weren't allowed to be together, or if you were together, which you don't have to disclose that or not, I don't care, but
we didn't really see each other much during the pandemic. You know, we didn't know what the hell was going on. And we actually, just before the pandemic, like a week or two before, me and Logan built a studio out here.
Oh wow.
And we had it, and Logan would come over, you know, because we didn't go anywhere. He lives right here, you know, and
yeah.
He would come over and we would sit there and write, and we would play and we would do covers, but we didn't really write much together. No, I was just trying to rack my brain, and they were racking their brains with ideas for guitars and parts and stuff like that. And then finally, when the doors opened up, we were like, okay, let's see what we can do. Yeah. It was so different trying to write an album during a pandemic though.
Yeah.
Totally different perspective than one normally would have under. Yep. circumstances, mm-hmm. because like, God, I've seen all these zombie movies. It's real. You know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. It's funny when you think of like, cause you guys are obviously, you're a band, but if you think of like these solo guys or like just songwriters, they're like, well, yeah, the pandemic sucked, but I also got to sit in my house and just write all day. But it's like, well, yeah, that's good. But like as a band, like that could be kind of tough to really, you know, form a whole song together.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It puts a strain on everything, you know, like you don't know when or if you're going to be able to play a show again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spent a lot of time outside during the, and I kind of got used to being at home and kind of, you know, looking at things around me because we didn't have internet here until like last week. We haven't had internet here ever at the house and,
oh, wow. You know,
kind of be outside messing around, you know, and just sitting outside all day. Didn't have anything else to do. And I'd sit there and play guitar and I'd write an idea and then I'd get tired and I'd put the guitar down and I'd drink a little bit and I'd pick it back. Yeah. Yeah, you know.
That sounds like the life to me. I don't know what everyone else was complaining about.
Yeah. It was not, I mean, it wasn't nice under certain circumstances.
Yeah. But
it was nice to be around family that live in the same area, you know.
Yeah.
Because we kind of have a compound here, you know, all my family's real close. And it was just nice to wake up and not have to worry about going somewhere, being somewhere, doing something, or your family not having to go and do something. You can just kind of see them out in the yard, you know, and it was great, you know, that aspect, it was great.
Right. Sure. Hell yeah, man. Do you ever do any like co-writing with other songwriters outside of the group?
Not much. I'd love to. I would absolutely love to, but I never really can find anyone who's ready. And when, you know, I'm ready and they're ready, it's like clashing schedules and stuff like that. You know, it's difficult, but that's a dream of mine. I'd love to co-write.
Hell yeah, man. So I guess let's move on to your upcoming album and Rise Above All, I believe it's called. Feel free to fact check me on this. And I believe it's August 23rd, right?
Yep, that's it.
All right. So is there anything you can tell us about what we could expect from it?
Yeah. The stuff that is considered the heavy rock on the album is more in tune with heavy rock. It's still Southern rock, but it's heavier than what the last record was. And the stuff that is considered our softer music is more, it's like Crawling My Way Back to You. It's more soulful. It's more bluesy. Okay. Or country, it's got the harmonies, it's got the acoustic guitar out front, and the stuff that's rocking, man. It's like it's strange because we kind of went into this. We have our Southern rock stuff on this album. We haven't varied from that at all. But there's also some of our songs have like an audio slave,
like a grungy kind of feel to it, or
yeah, and even like a Nickelback thing.
Yeah,
like just, you know, it's the stuff that rocks is like in your face. You know, it's just like push and pull. It's just like da 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 da. But the softer stuff and the more broken down dynamic stuff, that's way softer and it's could fit. And that's what I like about us too, is because we could go to the rock charts and then we could turn right around and go to the country charts. You know?
Yep.
That's the thing about us being so diverse and having such a diverse palette of, you know, musical influences, is we can take that and be like, oh, well, let's write something country. Let's write something soulful. Let's write something bluesy, you know, hard rock. Let's write a metal song. Come on, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, for sure. And like, that's why I think nowadays, like the whole genre shit, like it's kind of dead. Look everywhere, every genre now, like hip hop, you know, like country rock. And, but from like a marketing standpoint, or like when you look at the charts, and this is me just being curious, because I don't know how it works. How would you get, if you put out, say, a metal song, and then on the same album you have a country song. Yeah. How would you, when it comes to it charting, or like, do you have to specify each track in a different genre, or how do you guys do that?
We just shoot it to different markets. We'll shoot the heavier stuff to the hard rock or the metal, and then we'll shoot the country to the country or the, like the Americana stuff, you know? It just, it's like you said, it's so diverse and everything's really running together these days, you know?
Yeah.
Like the country rock and like Jelly Roll with Shinedown, you know, and, you know, it's just, and Nickelback with Hardy. I mean, holy cow.
I think Hardy's having Fred Durst on his upcoming album, which is going to be nuts.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
It's just, it's like all that post-grunge, early 2000s music that we loved is coming back, and it's getting in with the popular music. Like, I seen Nickelback the other day, they were headlining a huge country fest, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, this is great. 2007?
Yeah. And people don't seem to hate them anymore like they were faking, you know, years ago.
Yeah, I don't get the hate. They sold almost 100 million records, and Chad's one of the best vocalists and songwriters ever. I mean, really, honest to God.
And from what I understand, because I think I heard Kurt talking about it on, like, a podcast, like, apparently he's, like, a mentor to, like, so many people nowadays. Like, apparently he's, like, super wise by now, and, like, I'm sure he's always been wise, whatever, but like, and then like,
wise man,
what's that?
He never made it as a wise man.
That's, oh man, you got me with that one. I walked right into that shit. But, yeah, man, that's awesome. It's exciting for sure. So also, and we hit on it at the very beginning here a bit, but what's your touring looking like for like the rest of the summer? What you guys got? Anything cool coming up?
Yeah, just the Europe thing. We're going over to Europe in middle August, and we're doing a lot of shows. We're actually going out to Wyoming for the first time. We'll be out in Casper, and it's beautiful country out there. I think we'll be out there in September, so hopefully it doesn't snow early.
Yeah.
We don't have any shackles or chains for the tires or the trailer, but we're going out there. We're going to make our way west, and we're going up the East Coast. We're going to the Midwest, and we're going out Louisiana, going out through Texas, and we're kind of hitting the big East Coast thing with a few out west. So maybe next year we can get further, you know, out west and try to see what California or something has to offer.
Yeah, for sure. That's exciting. Are you guys hitting any festivals or anything coming up?
Not to my knowledge right now.
Okay.
But I'm sure there is something in the works, because our booking agency's on fire, and they're just like eating it up, man. They're just eating it up. It's awesome.
Are you a big fan of festivals personally? I mean, I hear some artists say it's great. Some say it's like a logistical nightmare. It might depend, right?
Yeah, it really depends, because, you know, some days your sound guys are burnout. You know, some days they just don't want to work, and because they've been working. I mean, they've been working 4 or 5 days a week, and they're just like, oh. And by the time they get to you, they're like, oh, these assholes, you know. but we do with what we can. You know, we like to get in anywhere as long as we're getting in front of people that want to listen to our music, you know. So there hasn't been any complaints, really, because we love to play so much, and we love playing live. And we've been doing a lot of headlining shows lately, and it's still nice to go back and do those 30 or 45 minute sets where you can just blow off steam and just stop, you know.
For sure, man. It's great. I love hearing it, man. It sounds like you guys are real hardworking, like nose to the grindstone, like road dogging it. It's nice to hear.
You gotta be, man, especially when you're playing this kind of music. You know, you have to keep going, you have to keep plugging and playing, and you have to keep doing what you can to keep your name out there, because, you know, we're not big, and we lack in this area so bad. We're not big social media guys because we didn't really grow up with that, you know.
Yeah.
And we don't really have a team for that or anything, so we play, you know. We play like they did back in the day. We go out there and, you know, word of mouth is our bread and butter. You know, we get out there and we play, and if, you know, they say they're coming, they don't show up, at least they heard of us, you know.
Yeah, it's actually funny you brought up the social media. I was gonna ask you that next. You kind of answered it there, but like, with you guys being like a band that's been around for a while and has kind of seen that whole part of it take over when it comes to like networking, marketing, and everything, I guess, and you pretty much answered, you said it's like all word of mouth and like just playing as many places as you can. Like, are you guys, is like evolving into that something you guys want to try to do, or are you guys comfortable where you're at now, which seems to be working?
Yeah, we're pretty comfortable where we are. You know, the social media stuff never really caught our attention. I mean, we love to be great at it. We would love to wake up and be great at it. You know, I know most people are just like wicked with social media. I mean, they'd be like, oh my God, you know, a million hits. And we struggle to get like 1,000, you know?
Yeah.
But we're just doing it the old fashioned way, man. We'll try. I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, the way the world's moving, we're going to get into, you know, more modern things and stuff like that. But, you know, we're just going to keep doing what we do.
Absolutely, man. I love to hear it. But TJ, man, this has been fun. Everyone listening, check out the Georgia Thunderbolts, because these guys, they're picking up steam. They've been picking up steam for a while, and it's good seeing more and more people discover them. But I still consider them like a hidden gem, man. Like, if you like that kind of music, the heavier Southern rock, I'll use that term again, but like, they're much more than that, and they're definitely a great band to follow. So TJ, if you have any plugs, by the way, like socials, or like, I know you mentioned, if you want to run by the date for the album again, go ahead.
Yeah, that's Friday, August 23rd, and you can catch all of our merch, all of our dates for our shows at georgiathunderbolts.com or any social media. We're there.
Awesome. And so, yeah, everyone check out TJ and also the Georgia Thunderbolts, the whole group. Also, while you're at it, check out Ray's Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials. And give us a Google. We'll pop up. So, TJ, thanks again, man. And we'll see you guys next time.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you so much.
My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight?